Matthew chapter 7. And as you all know, Brother Isaac's been going through the Sermon on the Mount, and it covers Matthew chapter 5, chapter 6, and chapter 7. And I'm going to give a little bit of a synopsis, but I'm going to cut to the end. What is it when you give away the ending, a spoiler? So this is going to be the spoiler of the Sermon on the Mount, I guess. But I don't think Brother Isaac's going to finish the Sermon on the Mount at the time he has left here, so I don't think he'll mind. So, Sermon on the Mount begins with the Beatitudes, which is what Brother Isaac is just finishing up. And then Christ, further down in chapter 5, he tells the multitude there listening to him that except ye your righteousness exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, ye shall in no case enter the kingdom of heaven. And then, so he's calling them to a greater righteousness than that of the scribes and Pharisees. And then for most of the rest of the Sermon on the Mount, he tells them what that greater righteousness is. As you know, he goes through and he says, you've heard it said. And then he says, thou shalt not kill. And he kind of gives a short explanation of what the Pharisees, scribes and Pharisees were teaching. And then he says, but I say, and he expounds on it more fully. And then he does the same thing with adultery and with revenge, an eye for an eye. You've heard an eye for an eye. And he says, you've heard love thy neighbor and hate thy enemy. And each one he gives the greater righteousness that we are to strive for. And then he goes into how we are to give alms. And again, he compares it to the scribes and the Pharisees. He says, don't do it before people. He says, praying, don't do it before people. Making a spectacle, but go into your closet. So in each case, he's holding up that greater righteousness. And then we come down, and so he does that for the rest of chapter 5, chapter 6, and the first half of chapter 7. And then we get to chapter 7, in verse 12, he begins, therefore. And here he's beginning the conclusion of the Sermon on the Mount. And so the rest of this chapter is his conclusion. And this conclusion, he gives a series of contrasting pairs, just like he has during the Sermon on the Mount, when he said, you've heard this, but this is what I say. You've heard this, but this is what I say, concerning all those different sins. So his conclusion consists of contrasting pairs on two paths, two different trees, two different claims, and two different builders. And each one of them contains a warning. And we're going to look tonight at verses 13 and 14, where he contrasts the two ways. And in these two verses, there's not only two ways, but there's two gates, there's two groups of travelers, and two different destinations. So let's read chapter 7, verses 13 and 14. Enter ye in at the straight gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction, and many there be which go in thereat. Because straight is the gate and narrow is the way which leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it. Now the first part of verse 13, that first phrase, enter ye in at the straight gate, it's a command, but it's also a call, it's a summons. And then the rest of those two verses is a warning. He says, enter ye in at the straight gate for, or this is why. And he explains why, it contains a warning. So, let's look at this straight gate. And a straight gate, when I was young, I used to get confused that the word STRAIT and STRAIGHT. I thought they meant the same thing. I thought, okay, the gate's not crooked. But straight means narrow. It's like we've all heard of the Strait of Gibraltar, where Spain comes down almost to Africa, makes a little bitty inlet into the Mediterranean Sea. It's confined, it's restricted, it's narrow through there. And that word, strait, in Strait of Gibraltar, is S-T-R-A-I-T, which is what we find here. So this gate is narrow, it's confined. And it's a picture of the call of the Holy Spirit. If you'll recall, later on in Matthew chapter 19, Christ told the rich young ruler, when he asked how he could enter in, what did he tell him? He told him he had to sell all he had, and he went away sorrowful because he had many possessions. And Christ said that it was easier for what? A camel to go through the eye of a needle than a rich man to enter into the kingdom of heaven. Well, that needle's pretty straight. It's pretty narrow. Just like this gate is pretty narrow. And it's impossible for man to do it on his own. But God calls his people to go through that gate. And that gate is the only way onto the narrow path. And that narrow path is the only way to the final destination of life. And so we're called to go through that. And so what is a gate? Well, a gate's like a door. It's like that door, the outside door, or the doors on our houses. You close it to keep the unwanted out, to keep those that don't belong out. During the biblical times, the large cities had walls around it for protection, and they all had gates. And the king could open the gates and let in who he wanted, or close the gates and keep out who he wanted. And so that's a good picture of this straight gate. It's there, it's narrow, the king lets in who he wants, and it's closed to those who don't belong. And in John 10, verse 9, John said, "I am the door. If any man enter in, he shall be saved." So a door, a gate, that door, that gate, that's Christ. And that's the way we enter in. And we're being given here in John chapter 7 is a summons, a call to enter in to that, to enter to that gate. In Luke, he says, "Enter to strive in at the straight gate. For many, I say unto you, will seek to enter it and shall not be able." So there's some that desire to enter in, but they're not able. But we are commanded to strive to enter in. So there's one path, there's one group of travelers leading to one destination, and they must start by going in through the straight gate. I think that's just a beautiful, beautiful picture of the call of the Holy Spirit to come to Christ. I don't remember much about the book Pilgrim's Progress because I read it many years ago. But I seem to recall that when Christian, he entered into what they called in the book, John Bunyan, the little wicket gate, and he was on that narrow path. There was one, I don't remember if he came over a hedge. He came into the path another way, but he didn't come in by the little wicket gate. And so he seemed to belong on that path because he seemed to be walking that path. But somewhere along the way, he turned aside because he didn't belong on that path. He did not come in through the little wicket gate. He didn't come into the way through Christ. And we see those sometimes, don't we, that seem to be on the path and turn aside. I also think of the parable of the sower. The sower throws the seed. He sows it. Some land, there's different types of soil. There's this weedy, what I call the weedy soil. There's the stony soil. At first they come up and it looks like they're going to take hold and they're going to produce fruit. But in the end, on the weedy soil, the weeds come up, they choke it out, the cares of the life overcome, and they never produce fruit. On the stony ground, what happens? Roots don't have depth, and when tribulations and trials and persecutions come, those plants that have promise wither and die. They didn't come in through the gate. The wide gate is extremely wide. It's wide enough for everyone else to walk through. It might seem that there are so many different religions and so many different worldviews in this world that there ought to be a lot of different gates, one for each of those. But the wide gate's wide enough for everyone to fit in. And when you consider that all these worldviews have something in common. They're ultimately man-centered. Man ultimately is earning his salvation in one way or another, even if they believe in another deity, like the Hindus that have many, or the Muslims that have Allah. It's all whether or not they get to whatever they call their paradise depends on what they do. It's all man-centered. So ultimately, it's that same wide gate, and they all walk through it. And one of the reasons they walk through it is because the way looks smooth. They can see through it. The way looks smooth. It's a nice wide path. So they walk through it, and they enter that broad path. And so it seems to be smooth. It seems to be no obstacles. But really, their worldview, their religion is man-centered. Even if they really have no religion and they're secular humanists, that's the ultimate man-centered belief. And so everyone on that path is self-centered, self-serving, seeking their own, rather than seeking what their Father calls them to do. And we hear so many times today this ecumenical idea of everyone has a different path to God. You hear people that claim to be Christians saying that. You hear everyone saying that. Not everyone, but you understand what I mean. But we know that's not true. There's one path, and it all comes through Christ. It all comes through that straight gate. I was so disappointed after 9/11. I don't know how many of you might remember the speech. There was some kind of a rally. George Bush was giving a speech, and they had some big Muslim cleric there, and they had a well-known, well-respected Christian evangelist. And the whole world was watching. Everybody in this country, it was being broadcast all over the world. And this evangelist, he started his speech so great. He started talking about the need for Christ. How everyone needed Christ. And then he ruined it, and he paused, and he said, "Now, I'm just talking to the Christians. This is just for the Christians." And my heart sank, because he was doing so well, and then he ruined it. But we know that there's one little gate, and there's one narrow path that leads where we need to go, that leads to life, that leads to the Father. And all these other ways, sometimes I look at this path, wide path, as maybe braided. I've hiked where there's a path and it splits and comes back together and splits and comes back together. So you can look at it like that if you want, all these different worldviews. They may split for a little bit, but ultimately they all come back to the same path and headed for the same destination. Now, the narrow way, as I said, is the only way through the straight gate. It's restricted and it's confined. And from a human standpoint, we don't like that. I mean, this book is full of what we might say are do's and don'ts, and we don't like to be told to do or don't. But when you think about it, they're like, when we're traveling down the highway going from point A to point B, we see all kinds of road signs. We see signs that say, wrong way, don't turn here. We see stop, bridge out ahead, all kinds of cautions, warnings, slow down, dangerous curve ahead. And that's what these warnings in here are, these do's and don'ts. They're warnings. They're there for our benefit. And so it may look like that the narrow way is the hard way, but it's the best way. It's the way, well, it leads to the Father, and it is the only way that we have. If we enter through that gate, we don't have a choice. That is the way to go. It's the only way. It's the only path on the other side of that gate. And it requires us to turn from our sinful nature, deny ourselves, and to completely submit to Christ's will and to Christ's ways. And I think that road is a good picture of growing in holiness, what the camp theme was. It's a good picture of sanctification. Now, we know that as we walk, we don't do it perfectly. And sometimes we see our brethren stray into the left or stray into the right. And we all do that because we all have the remnants of that sinful nature in us. And I look at it like a river. Like if I asked y'all, what direction does the Mississippi River flow? Everybody would say, well, it flows south to the sea. All right, north to south. Well, that's true. But if you look at a close-up of that river, it meanders around. It's flowing to the east, and then all of a sudden it turns and it goes back to the west, and then it turns, and sometimes it may actually turn and go north for a little bit. And that's what our lives can be like. We're heading towards Christ. We're trying to our best to root the sin out of our life, to grow in holiness, and all of a sudden we turn to the left. We realize it, and we turn back to God, and before you know it, we're turning back to the right. Sometimes we may turn away for a little bit. But the true Christian, if you look at his life, he's going to have those turns in it. But if you back up and look at the big picture, he's always flowing towards Christ. Now, on this road, on these two different paths, these two different ways, there's two groups of travelers. There's the many, and there's the few. And the broad way, the way of the many, is the way of my will and my way. And one of the reasons so many people follow that path, it's because we have this herd mentality. There's safety in numbers, right? You see the way the mass is going, you think there's safety in numbers. It's also the easy way, with no restrictions. I mean, I just do what I want to do, right? I mean, don't we see example after example, ridiculous examples of, I was born a man, but I want to be a girl, or all these examples of just absolute denial of right and wrong of absolute truth. Now, on the narrow road are few. And we see both in the Old Testament, when God was talking about his people, and in the New Testament, describes them as few. In Deuteronomy, God says that he chose Israel because they were the fewest of people. And here he says there's few on the road, but other places in the Old Testament, he tells them that they're going to be a great multitude. And in Revelations, he says that the kingdom is going to have a great multitude, more than any man can number. So we have this apparent problem, but it's just apparent. Of some places it says few, some places it says many. Well, it is many in number, but it's few in comparison. When you compare, in fact, in Deuteronomy 7, where he says you are the fewest of people, he was comparing them to the other people, the other tribes and the other nations. And here where he's talking about those on the two roads, the few and the many, that's a comparative. There are many on the narrow road, but very few compared to the broad way, the easy way, the way of those who are following their selfish nature. We come to the destination, or the place of ending. And this is most important. This is what the Lord is emphasizing. And on the one hand, we have life, which is the ultimate state of well-being. And on the other side, we have destruction. And usually when we think of destruction, we think of completely destroyed. Like if you have the destruction of a building or destruction of a bridge, that building or that bridge are no more. But this destruction, as compared to the ultimate well-being of life, this destruction is the ultimate loss of well-being, because it is a complete separation from God. It's described in chapter 25 of Matthew, 25 verse 41, where he is speaking of the second coming of Christ, separating the sheep from the goats, that the goats will go into everlasting fire. Now, we've all burned ourselves, a small burn, but boy, is it painful. It's really painful. I cannot imagine being burned over my entire body, everlasting. But time after time in the scriptures, this everlasting, this destruction is described as everlasting fire. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 1, we are told that those that don't know God and obey not the gospel shall be punished with everlasting destruction. So there's that destruction, and it's everlasting. That's 2 Thessalonians chapter 1, verse 7 to 9. So that's kind of an explanation of this path. The gate that leads to the path, the travelers that are on it, and the place of destination. But there's one path, there's one gate, one path, one group of travelers headed to one destination. There's a second gate, a second path, a second group of travelers, all headed to the second destination. And those are the only two choices. Those are the only two possible outcomes. And this, in conclusion, if we were to read on the other contrasting pairs through the rest of Christ's conclusion of this greater righteousness, where he talks about the two trees or the two claims that are made or the two builders, we would see that each one of them is a warning where one group ends in some kind of destruction. With the trees, you have a tree that brings forth good fruit and one that brings forth evil fruit. The evil trees are cut down and cast into the fire. On the two claims, there's a claim by some that they knew God. They said, "Lord, Lord, didn't we do all these works in your name?" And what does Christ say? He says, "Depart from me, ye workers of iniquity. There's this complete separation from Christ. And that's an eternal separation. That's part of that eternal destruction. And then the two builders, one builds on the rock, and the storms come, and that building stands. The other builds on the shifting sand. The storms come. It collapses. It's destroyed. So, two trees, two claims, two builders, two paths. And these paths, all of them start with that little straight gate."
Thank you for listening to this message. Our prayer is that you've been blessed by the messages and the daily devotional blog on sermon audio from Ripley Primitive Baptist Church. We would love the opportunity to be of greater service to you and your walk with Christ. In other words, we would like to get to know you better. Do you have need of counsel, of a home church, or can we just pray for you? Please feel free to contact us by phone at 662-837-8590 or visit our website at www.ripleypbc.com.